Okay. So tonight we will be covering the pasuk that contains within it Hashem's declaration to Moshe of Eheke, Asher Eheke, which we have over here. And this comes in the context of the conversation between Moshe and God, when Hashem is trying to convince Moshe to come down to Mitzrayim to release the Jews, to take them out. And Moshe is fighting and fighting and fighting for a week. They go back and forth until Moshe finally acquiesces after Hashem agrees to pair him up with Aharon, his brother. But in that context, at some point in the conversation, the Zohar says, "Vayomer Moshe al Elohim, Hinei Anochi Baal Bnei Yisrael v'amarti lahem, Elohei Avotichem shalachani aleichem, v'amruli mashmo, ma omar aleichem." Let's say I do it. Let's say I go down to Mitzrayim and I tell the people that the God of your forefathers has sent me to you. And they ask me, "What's your name?" What am I supposed to tell them? Vayomer lema Moshe, Eke Asher Eke, Vayomer kotomar livnei Yisrael, Eke shalachani aleichem. Hashem says to Moshe, "I will be what I will be. And you should tell Bnei Israel that I will be is sent to them." And the question is, what does all this mean? Namely, most importantly, maybe, what is the phrase Ekeh Asher Ekeh actually mean? It's literally a tautology. Tautology is when you say something that's meaningless because it is what it is, right? Like a dog is a dog, or a cat is a cat. It means nothing. Of course, a cat is a cat. So the same word twice. Now, Rashi's explanation, you just have to mention Rashi's explanation, is zot malchiot. So Rashi has a midrashic interpretation. He says that it's actually talking about the future, right? Eyeh is a lashon of atid. I will be what I will be. I will be with them now, and I will be with them in the future, in other shibudim. This is based on the Gemara in Brachot, actually. And Moshe's response to that was, "You want to tell them now that there's going to be another galus, that there's going to be another exile? Bad enough that they're in exile right now." Hashem said, "I will be as I am sent to you, as I am sent, being sent to them, really." So that's how Rashi understands it. But it kind of leaves, you know, a little bit on the side in terms of the actual context. The content of this phrase that Hashem gives. So what I want to look at tonight is the very, very different ways that the Rambam and Ramban, as usual, look at this phrase. And I think it's going to be somewhat typical of the two of them. Does anybody want to predict at the outset how the Rambam and the Ramban are going to interpret these psukim? Want to take a shot?
The Rambam,
come on, you're usually good at this.
The Rambam will be rational, and the Ramban will be mystical.
Well, how do you interpret "I will be what I will be" rationally?
I don't know, but just as a general.
Okay, you know, that's fair.
I think the Rambam will be more in line with Rashi than the Ramban.
Interesting.
I think the Rambam just means, "I am what I am, and it shouldn't bother them. I am what I am, and I will take them out of Egypt."
Okay.
Don't sweat the small stuff.
Interesting. Interesting. I see, Marilyn. You're saying, it's purposely vague. And it means, it doesn't matter what you call me. I am what I am.
I'm not going to tell you anyway.
Okay. Okay. So it's purposely vague, and it means I'm not going to tell you my name. There's no name that you need. You don't need to know.
That's fine.
All right, well, let's see. So the Rambam covers this actually in his Mor Nevuchim, and I know this because the Ramban, this is one of those cases where the Ramban actually quotes the Mor Nevuchim in his commentary. We'll get to the Ramban after. But the Ramban quotes the Mor Nevuchim, very paraphrased. He doesn't even really quote the Rambam. I don't think he quotes any of his words. He just summarizes what the Rambam says in one line, and as you can see, it's actually quite a bit in the English. So we're gonna run through some of this. So, but the Rambam does start by just saying, "Look, we need a little bit of context." He says, "Before approaching the subject of this chapter, we'll consider the words of Moshe, and they shall say unto me, 'What is his name? What shall I say unto them?'" How far was this question anticipated by Moses appropriate? And how far was he justified in seeking to be prepared with the answer? Okay, we have to first start with the question. Moshe is asking, what is Moshe asking Hashem for? When he says, what am I, what's your name, essentially? What is he asking for?
He's asking for a description.
What will he tell the people?
What will he tell the people? Yeah, he's asking for guidance as to what he's supposed to tell them when they ask him that.
Okay. So now let's just clarify. Why does he really expect that the people are going to ask him this question?
It's a story.
Maybe he needs to know what aspect of Hashem, that Hashem has, you know, different, there are different aspects. There's chesed and gevurah.
Well, that's very interesting. So Barbara, you think that Moshe is asking, what aspect should I say is coming to save them?
Yeah, but they know Hashem. They know who Hashem is, but there's... You know, El Shaddai, there's all the different names that
right.
are the different aspects.
Okay.
So which one is...
I think it's a fair question to say, what do you mean you're going to save us? Who sent you?
Well, he says, my God of your forefathers. Okay.
Okay, then what's his name? They get his name.
Right.
Why would they say that?
Something to do with the fact that the ancient gods in the pagan world that they were living had names and were very specific as to who you were talking about or who you were talking to.
Okay. So it almost sounds like you're saying that they actually didn't know. Maybe Moshe says, okay, I'm coming in the name of the God of your forefathers. And they say, well, we don't know who that is. So what's his name? How do we describe you? And so Moshe asks them that. Okay, fine. So the Rambam says, how far was this question appropriate? And Moses was correct in declaring, but behold, they will not believe me, for they will say, the Lord hath not appeared unto thee. You know what? Moshe is going to say, that doesn't help. They're not going to believe me. For any man claiming the authority of a prophet must expect to meet with such an objection so long as he has not given a proof of admission. So Moshe is, it would seem, is asking not only for a name, but he's asking for more than that, isn't it? Isn't he? Because it's not good enough to just give a name. You need some kind of evidence. Again, if the question, as appears at first sight, referred only to the name, as a mere utterance of the lips, just the name, the following dilemma would represent itself. Either the Israelites knew the name, or they had never heard of it. If the name was known to them, they would perceive in it no argument in favor of the mission of Moshe. His knowledge and their knowledge of the divine name being the same. He is a Jew, so of course he knows the name. If, on the other hand, they had never heard it mentioned, and if the knowledge of it was to prove the mission of Moses, what evidence would they have that this is really a name of God? Moreover, after God had made that name known to Moses and had told him, go and gather, et cetera, et cetera, he says, they won't believe me. And then what does Hashem end up doing in order to prove his existence or to prove that Moses is his prophet? What does Hashem end up doing?
He makes a miracle with a rod.
He gives them signs, right? He gives them the staff. He gives them his hand. He gives them the blood. So at the end of the day, the name is not going to cut it, right? So what good is it? So, in order to obviate this dilemma, you must understand what I'm about to tell you. You know how widespread were in those days the opinions of the Sabaeans. So these are Ovdei Avodah Zarah. All men, except a few individuals, were idolaters. That is to say, they believed in spirits and in man's power to direct the influences of the heavenly bodies and in the effect of talismans. Anyone in those days laid claim to authority, based it either like Avraham. So in other words, what does a prophet do in those days? Either they do like Avram on the fact that by reasoning and by proof he had been convinced of the existence of a being who rules the whole universe. According to the Rambam, Avram went around giving symposiums. Okay? Avram went around with a professor hat on his head, and he engaged the people in debate and philosophy and proved the existence of God. That's what Avram did. But no one could establish his claim on prophecy, that is, on the fact that God had spoken to him or had entrusted a mission to him. Before the days of Moses, no such assertion had ever been made. Say that again. Okay, what is the Rambam saying? He's saying no one before Moses ever said, God has sent me with the following message to everybody. Nobody. Mm-hmm. Not Avram, not Yitzchak, not Yaakov or Yosef or anybody. You must not be misled by the statements that God spoke to the patriarchs. Of course Hashem spoke to the Avot, or that he appeared to them. For you do not find any mention of prophecy which appealed to others or which directed them. But there's two things missing, the Rambam says. Number one, Hashem never told any of them to tell anybody else anything. And number two, Hashem didn't actually give them prophecy which directed them. What's the problem with this?
Noach.
Okay, Noach, that's a good example. That's a good example, although presumably Noach was supposed to do it on his own, right? But that's a good point. But I would have said, what do you mean Avram was never given any instruction? Avram was given instruction. He was told to do a bris milah, right? But what does the Rambam say? Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, or any other person before them, did not tell the people, God said unto me, you shall do this thing, or you shall not do that thing, or God has sent me to you. Far from it. For God spoke to them on nothing but what especially concerned them. He communicated to them things relating to their perfection, directed them in what they should do, and foretold them what the condition of their descendants would be, nothing beyond this. Each one of the Avot had a personal relationship with God, but not a professional relationship. They weren't supposed to do anything. They were supposed to just, between the two of them. They got her the fellow by means of argument and instruction. And if Avram ever told anybody to do something, it was only because Avram thought that that was the right thing to do, not because God told him to say so. It's interesting that Hashem even says about Avram, I know that he'll teach his descendants to follow my halachot and my mitzvot. But not that he's going to be mitzaveh then. Not that he's going to tell them to do it because Hashem said to. Hashem's not going to bother. He continues, as is implied, according to the interpretation generally received amongst us, and the words and the souls that they had gotten in Haran. What did Chazal say? That he gathered them with philosophy, with Hakarat HaTov. Okay. When God appeared to Moshe and commanded him to address the people and to bring them in the message, Moshe replied that he might first be asked to prove the existence of God in the universe, and that only after doing so would he be able to announce to them that God had sent him. So, according to the Rambam, when Moshe says, when they ask me for your name, what do I tell them? What is he really asking for?
How do I prove that you exist?
Exactly. The same thing that Avram had apparently done. For all men, with few exceptions, were ignorant of the existence of God. Their highest thoughts did not extend beyond the heavenly spheres. They could not yet emancipate themselves from sensation and had not yet attained any intellectual perfection. Okay, the Rambam did not have the highest view of the people at the time. So, what did God do? God taught Moses how to teach them and how to establish amongst them the belief in the existence of himself, Hashem. Namely, by saying, Ehyeh Asher Ehyeh. Now, what are we supposed to get from that name? Then it's a name, first of all, by the way. I want to be clear, and we'll see this later on. That is a name of God. A name derived from the verb haya, in the sense of existing. For the verb haya denotes to be. And in Hebrew, no difference is made between the verbs to be and to exist. The principal point in this phrase is that the same word which denotes existence is repeated as an attribute. Okay, without continuing, what do you make of that? The same word which denotes existence is repeated as an attribute. The Rambam is explaining why it says Ehekeh Asher Ehekeh twice. What does he mean? What does the Rambam mean when he says this?
That the word Ehekeh is the attribute.
Asher which is the first and the second. Which, okay. So are they both attributes? What does that mean?
One's a verb. One is a verb.
So it's the essence. He's saying the essence of Hashem is existence.
Is existence with a capital E.
Yeah, all existence. Yeah.
Why? What's special about God's existence that the Rambam thinks is important?
Everlasting?
It's more than everlasting, right?
It's not conditional on anything.
It's not conditional on anything. It's the only absolute existence.
Mm-hmm.
That's, according to the Rambam, a critical understanding of God. His existence is fundamentally different from everything else because we don't have to exist. Have to is kind of a weird word. We don't exist in an unconditional sense, but God does. The word asher, he says, that corresponds to the Arabic iladi. We're just going to take his word for that. And is an incomplete noun that must be completed by another noun. It may be considered as the subject of the predicate which follows. I don't know what that means. The first noun which is to be described is ehyeh, and the second by which the first is described is likewise ehyeh, the identical word, as if to show that the object which is to be described and the attribute by which it is described are in the case necessarily identical. So it's not a tautology, because when you say a dog is a dog, right? Well, I mean, if you were to say that and you were to mean it, what you would really be saying is that the essential aspect of a dog is its dogness. Nobody else is a dog like a dog is. Nobody is more of a cat than a cat. So when God says, I am that, that I am an am. I am an am, right? What he means to say is nobody exists more than I exist. Okay? This is, therefore, the expression of the idea that God exists, but not in the ordinary sense of the term. Or in other words, he is the existing being, which is the existing being. That is to say, the being whose existence is absolute. The proof which he was to give consisted in demonstrating that there is a being of absolute existence that has never been and never be, will be without existence. Now, let me just ask.
Why is it in the future? Sorry, why is it in the future then?
That's a good question. Could have said what? Haya, sher haya. That's a good question.
I think haya, sher haya almost gives a tinge of, well, it was, but maybe is it not now?
I guess it's to pick up on what Mark was saying before, the everlastingness of it, the infinity of it. Right? Haya, sher haya, I will always be.
I am, and I will be. That's the nature of my.
But here's the question: how is this a proof exactly? Well, Moshe shows up. He says, "I was sent by the God of your forefathers," and then they say, "What God? Who God? Where God? How do we know there's a God?" And he says, "Yeah, sure, yeah." How is this supposed to work? They'll just say, you say God exists absolutely, we say he doesn't exist at all. What's the argument? So this appears to be a cosmological argument. The cosmological proof of God is that there has to be a Matsui Rishon, that if there's a reason for our existence, there has to be a reason for that. And then there's a reason for that, and a reason for that, and a reason for that. And it's turtles all the way down until you have to find one, and that's it. And you can't ask about that, why does that exist, or why, or a reason, or a cause. So God is that. So when you say, yeah, sure, yeah, and you say that means that God's existence is absolute, that's the argument. It's saying, guys, you exist because your parents exist, and they exist because their parents exist, and they exist because their parents exist. But there has to be, go back, there has to be an original existence. That's God. That's the proof. Ironically, Barbara, it actually relies more on the past than it does on the future.
Mm.
God thus showed Moses the proofs by which his existence would be firmly established among the wise men of Israel. Therefore, the explanation of the name is followed by the words, go gather the elders of Israel, and by the assurance that the elders would understand what God had shown to him and would accept it as a state in the words, and they will hearken to thy voice. Then Moses replied as follows, they will accept the doctrine that God exists convinced by these unintelligible proofs. But by what means shall I be able to show that this existing God has sent me? Therefore, God gave him the sign. According to the Rambam, the proof of God is not the signs. The only thing the signs prove is that Moshe has spoken to God. The existence of God is not in question for the elders, for the Chachamim, but that Moses is the guy, that is in question. And he solves that with the signs. Okay?
That proves that Moses is the messenger. Perhaps, right?
Exactly. That's the Rambam's view of Ehekeh, Asher Ehekeh. That is a description of God.
But the messenger is not the question. Moshe asks God, when people ask me who sent me, I guess it is the messenger. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Right. No. That's because the Rambam is saying this because right after all this, Moshe still says, but what if they don't believe me? So the Rambam says, that can't be talking about belief that there is a God. Moshe is going to prove that there's a God. They can't argue with that. Once he says, Ekeh Asher Ekeh, the whole class will be monotheists. That's it. Everybody's going to be monotheists. Moshe doesn't doubt that. But maybe he's a false prophet. So for that, he needs to bring the signs. But for the Rambam, the statement of Ekeh Asher Ekeh, that name that God gives him, That is, first of all, at the same time, a name, but it's also a philosophical proof. So this, of course, is so quintessentially Rambam.
So there's two different problems Moshe's got. The first is to prove to the people, or to make clear to the people that the nature of the eternal being that exists. And the second problem is to prove that not just that this is the one, the God that we're talking about, but that this God actually communicated with me and sent me.
Right.
So it's two different things.
Yeah. Okay. And that's how the Rambam reads the story. Exactly. Now, you'll notice that I keep saying Ekeh Asher Ekeh. Why do I do that? Because the Rambam in Hilchot Yesodei HaTorah, in his Mishnah Torah, he paskins, based on the Gemara in Shavuot, anybody who destroys a name of God, right, a written name of God, gets malkot. Because we're supposed to destroy all traces of Avodah Zarah, but not do that to God, meaning we're not allowed to do that to Hashem's name. Now, we need to know, what are the names of God? Shiva Shemotem. There are seven names of God that are included in this mitzvah. Hashem Anichtav, Yud, and then a Hey, and then a Vav, and then a Hey. Vu Hashem HaMeforash, that's the explicit name of God. O HaNichtav Ad Hashem, Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, when it's written as Hashem's name. Ve Kel, Ve Eloak, Ve Elokim, Ve Ke, Vishakai Vitzvakot. Did anybody count these as I was reading them? There should be how many?
Eight.
Should be seven, right? Let's see. There's this one. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Oh boy. What are we going to do?
Because the first one encompasses all the others.
Nah. This is the Ketzer Mishnah of Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch. Umash Agadav Rabbeinu Shehem Shiva Shemot Ubepratan Atamot Shmona. I was the first one to notice. There are eight. Hainu Mishum, the Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, the Yud Kevave, Shem Echad. The first two that he gave, Yud-Ke and Vav-Ke, are the same as Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, because almost always when you say the word Aleph Dalet Nun and Yud, it's always written as Yud and Hey and Vav and Hey. Those are the same name. Okay? That's what he explains. Now, there's another nusach that says, Matzati Shulaya Katuv Elokai, in the Venezia version, you'll see what you have to understand over here is what's going on is that apparently in the copy that was in front of Rav Yosef Karo, our Ekeh wasn't there. The copy that was the classic popular copy in front of him, the Aleph Hey Yud Hey, wasn't there. Instead, there was Elokai. Okay? Which does not show up in ours. We have Kel, Eloak, and Elokim. And then we have Aleph Hey Yud Hey. But he says, in some of them it says Elokai. But then he says, in Venezia, which is the correct, he says is the correct one, by the way, he says, Nuschanu nechonahi, demani sham eke, bechal shiva shemot, veina nutzichim nidachek limnot sham hevaya v'shem adenut be'echad. He had a totally different gersa. He found one, but he says in that one, it's a heke, which, by the way, does show up in the Gemara. The only difference is that in the Gemara, it has the full name. It says eke asher eke. Whereas the Rambam only writes eke. What that means is that it's a name. According to the Rambam, it's a name of God. The same as Shakai or Tzfakot. the Shulchan Aruch in Yerodeh actually says, "Asur limchok afilo tachat mishiva shemot sheinam nimchakim, shem avaya, shem adnut, keel, eloak, elokim, shakai, tzvakot, v'yesh gorsim gam kein eke asher eke." So he has it as a girsa, because as we said, it depends on the version of the Rambam that you've got, whether or not eke is actually a name. The Gra just mentions this is like the nusach that we have in the Rambam, that's correct. And he points out that it's counted in many places. So the Gra just points out that this is according to the girsa that we have, the correct girsa in the Rambam. So this is an important halachic issue, that when you say this pasuk, right, eke asher eke, so when you say it out of context, you must say eke. You don't say Hashem's name fully. That is the Rambam. That is the Rambam. Now we'll move on to the Ramban, Nachmanides. Now, let's start. So the question is, what are we supposed to make of this? So the Ramban starts in the same place as the Rambam. Ha-pasuk hazeh omer lecha parsheni. Explain me. Ki lo yitachen shiomar v'amru li mashmo liyot lahem ot sheyaminu bo. Ki sheilat shmo v'amirato lahem eina ot lemi shelo yamin bo mitchila. The Ramban says it can't be that Moshe is asking for a proof of God's existence, and then he says, my name is Eke Asher Eke. Because what does the name do? If they don't believe in him, they're not going to believe in him once you give them a name. Because basically, this is the Rambam verbatim, right? Because if they know his name, then of course Moshe knows his name. He knows them just as well. He knows God as well as they know God. And if they never heard of him, then this is not going to help. All right? He's basically cribbing directly from the Rambam. All right? He copied it over into his book. But then he quotes the Ibn Ezra. He says, the Ibn Ezra says, Sha'al Moshe, ma shem yomar lehem Yisrael mishmotav. Says, the Ramban doesn't say like the Rambam that there's some kind of philosophical proof. He says, first, he says, the Ibn Ezra suggested that Moshe was actually asking for a name because, like Barbara said before, God has many names. What name would you like me to tell them? Ki bekel shakai lo yaseh otot rak b'shem magadol. But it's even more than that. According to the Ibn Ezra, when Moshe asks for the name, what he's really asking for is, what title will you be going by in this Geula? What difference does it make? What title?
You as in Moshe?
Moshe asks Hashem, what title will you be going by during this Geula?
Oh, will Hashem be going
by? What does it matter what title he's going to be using?
Will it be the name of Rachamim? Will it be the name of Din?
So you would have expected that. But in fact, what the Ibn Ezra suggests is, he says, well, I know you as Kel Shakai. You've introduced yourself to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov as Kel Shakai. The problem is, Kel Shakai doesn't do miracles. He doesn't do open, really crazy miracles. And you're not going to be able to get Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim without doing those. So what name are you going to go by? It's not going to be Kel Shakai. Now the Ramban disagrees with this. The Ramban says, no. Moshe doesn't know that he's going to do crazy miracles. He just knows they're going to be taken out. And in fact, with the name of Kel Shakai, couldn't Hashem go into Paro's heart and mind and just cause Paro to let them go? He certainly could, and that wouldn't be an open miracle. We've seen kind of subtle, muted miracles by Hashem up until now. So the Ramban disagrees with Ibn Ezra that Moshe is asking if Hashem is going to come in with the hammer or if he's going to come in with, you know, subtle nisim nistarim. So that's, according to the Ramban, not what's going on. So what is going on? So he says, "Lefi da'ati haya Moshe gam be'et ahi av b'chochma gadol." Says, I think that Moshe was a very wise person already, and he was even a prophet. This is somewhat of a dispute. At what point does Moshe become Moshe? Right? So Ramban says he was already something special. V'derech she'ela b'kesh yodiu mi'asholech otok lomar be'ezo midah u'shaluach eleyem. Barbara and everybody else, this is what you were talking about. With which midah? Kinyan Shema Yishayahu. Vata Hashem Elokim Shalcheinu V'rucho. V'hine Amar Yishaluni Al Shlichuti. Im Hi B'midat Tekel Shekai Hisham Delavot. O B'midat Rachamim El Yonot Shetaseh Ba'otot U'moftim U'chudashim B'yitzira. He's asking. He's not challenging God, but he's asking. You know, I want you to tell me, are you going to be going with the midah of Kel Shekai that you gave the Avot, or is this going to be something new? V'alkein Sha'amal Ma Omar Lehem. Okay, and he quotes the Midrash. So what does Hashem say? He says, Eheke Asher Eheke. Eye Imachem B'tzarazu. He quotes Rashi, who says that it, just like in the future Tzarot, I'm going to be with you in this Tzara. Okay. I don't want to go too deeply into it. The Ramban quotes several Midrashim. I want to just jump down to the relevant part for us. He quotes the Rambam. Arav Amar B'mon Avuchem HaNimtza Asher Hu Nimtza Klamar Ra'uy HaMetziyut Yivarelam Ki Yesh Nimtza Ra'uy Limatzeh Shelo Yeh Nehadar V'lo Yehiyah Nehadar. Rambam says, Eke Asher Eke means God is, was, always will be. He's the only thing that truly exists because he's the only thing that cannot not exist. He's the only thing that cannot not exist. Clear? Ramban says, that's very nice. That's great for a philosophy of religion class. Not good for an enslaved people in Egypt. He's supposed to teach them this name. He's supposed to give them rational mathematical proofs. That's not going to convince anybody who believes in Aristotle's eternal world. We're just heretics, nihilists. It's not going to convince anybody who doesn't believe in God. So what is it? So here the Ramban brings out the big guns. Says, I don't think the Rambam is right. He gives them, he has the wrong impression of what the people needed. People need truth. The people need accuracy. So what is it? Zeh Hashem, tshuvat shelato, shepirashnu lacha. Hodiu shehu shaluach aleihem b'midat hadin, asher b'midat haracham. Okay, here we go. According to the smallness of my understanding, we're going to understand the Ramban. There's a reason why Art Scroll, you know, Art Scroll came out with the translation of the Ramban. Has anybody ever seen it? So the English part, Mark, what's interesting about the English part of the translation?
I've seen the book. I haven't read it.
It's missing. It's holed. It's filled with holes. Every time the translator got to a part that had mystical notions, Kabbalah, the translation says, the Ramban explains things mystically. If you want to understand it, look in the Hebrew. Art Scroll refuses to translate the mystical parts. Now, the fact is, I actually know the translator. He was a Rebbe in Reshit, and he told us how upset he was and disappointed that he had to do this. He didn't want to. He wanted to translate. But Art Scroll does not translate mystic matters. That's, if you look in the Art Scroll translation of Shir HaShirim, it uses the allegorical translation, and it doesn't go into Kabbalistic ideas. So we're going to do our best with the help of Dr. Chavel, who edited and annotated the Ramban. So he says, what's going on is that Hashem is informing Moshe that he is going to be coming down to Mitzrayim with the Midat HaDin, Asher B'Midat HaRacham, which is a fusion of Midat HaDin, mercy, of justice, and the Midat HaRachamim, of mercy. And the way that Dr. Chavel explains this, mostly, is that Hashem is telling Moshe that at the same time that I will be being merciful to Bnei Israel, I will be acting with strict judgment towards Mitzrayim. And I can do both of those things at the same time. It won't be one God punishing Egypt and another God saving Bnei Israel. It's going to be one doing both. V'amar kol tamar levnei Yisrael eheya shalachani aleichem sheyaskir lehem Hashem ha'echad levado lehorot al achdut. In other words, eke asher eke is a split personality, so to speak, of God. There's God as midat adin and God as midat harachamim, and he says, I'm coming as both, and you should explain to me, so when you actually tell them the name, because you'll notice, it's interesting. Does Hashem tell Moshe to tell Bnei Israel, Eke Asher Eke? He
does not. He says no.
Eke sent you.
Eke.
He says only one. He says, Moshe, I'm telling you, Eke Asher Eke. But when you come down to Bnei Israel and you tell them about me, what do?
Eke Asher
One.
You just tell them about one. You tell them he is a one God. Because from their perspective, from Bnei Yisrael's perspective, which version of him are they going to see?
Well, they hope Rachamim, but it doesn't actually turn out that way, does it?
Well, in Mitzrayim, certainly, they get Midat HaRachamim. They get only Midat HaRachamim in Mitzrayim. He treats them with mercy, Bnei Yisrael. The ones that get taken out. V'yaduki olich liyamin Moshe Azra tifarto v'yachadesh ototum oftim ba'ola. V'ine pireish lo ki eheke asher tzivau le'mor lahem hu Hashem ha'gadol hazeh. Should know that this name of eheke, this is the name Amafarash. This is Yudke Vavke. V'hem shavim bilshonam uba'otiyot. What does that mean?
Two last letters are the first letters of Shem
HaMefarash. No, in Yud, K, and Vav, and K, the first and the last letters, right? Shtei otiyot ahronot shebeshem harishon hem hakodmot bazeh. What does that mean? The yud k of eheke, right? Aleph hey yud hey. Those last two letters are the first two letters of
yud k vav k.
Yud k vav k. Shtei otiyot ahronot shebeshem harishon of eheke are the first two letters of Yud Kei Vav Kei. Ki barishon yaru al chokhmat shlomo. Okay, so here we're getting deep. Because the first is referring to the chokhmah of shlomo. Kedichtiv Hashem natan chokhmah shlomo. Baze yaru al chokhmat elokim. Va'ota alaf barishon tore al kadmut v'achid. The first letter of Eke refers to chokhmah. The first letter of Eheke refers to Chochmah. Why? Because Aleph is the first letter, and it is, okay, so two things. Number one, Aleph represents singularity, unity, because it's number one. And number two, Chochmah in the Kabbalistic spheres is all the way at the top. It represents Keter, which is above Chesed and Gvura and Din. There's Chochmah. That's the first thing that happens, is Chochmah. That's Alpi Kabbalah. So it's number one. In fact, the Ramban writes in the first Pasuk in Bereshit, when it says that Hashem created the world with Reshit, he says Reshit is Chochmah. Chochmah is the first of the Kabbalistic spheres, of the 10 Kabbalistic spheres, the 10 Sfirot. So starting with Aleph of Ekeh, that's what he's saying. And then Yud b'sheni al eser sviyot blima. The Yud of the, which is the first letter of Yud Kei Vav Kei, right? That refers to, that's the eser sviyot, number 10. So you have Aleph of Aleph, Hey, Yud and Hey, and the Yud of Yud Kei Vav Kei, those represent the 10 sviyot. They're the same. They're basically overlapping, the two of them. You ready? What did he just say? Anybody know what he just said?
Lost.
Anybody? Nilkechu shtei ha'otiyot ha'ele, ha'alef v'hayud, the first two letters of Ehekeh and Yudkeh Vavkeh are the first letter, sorry, the first letter of each one of them
is 10.
Aleph and Yud, right? Aleph of Ehekeh and Yud of Yudkeh Vavkeh.
Right.
He took those two letters and he put them at the front and the back of the way that we pronounce Hashem's name. How do we pronounce Hashem's name? Aleph, Dalid, Nun,
yeah.
And Yud. Starts with an Aleph, ends with a Yud.
Good.
And then what did he put in the middle?
Dalid
and a Nun, right? Dalid and a Nun.
Din.
Din. Nilkechu shtei otiyot ha'ele, Aleph ha'dalet, Yud, mishtei ha'shemot ha'kadoshim, v'nechtevu tchila v'sof b'shem ha'nechtav, v'nikra b'aleph dalet, l'arot ki hu atzilut min ha'rosh v'ad ha'sof, Midat Adin be'emtza kishmi bikirbo, and then there's Midat Adin in the middle. So you have these two names, Ehekeh and Yudkeh Vavkeh, which represent the fact that God is the beginning and the end of everything. Right? Then he gave us a way to pronounce his name. How do we pronounce his name? We take the first letter of each one of those, we set it at the beginning and at the end, and then in the middle we put Din. Midat Adin Asher Midat Arachamim, right? Midat Adin Be'emtza, Kishmi Bekirbo. That's what he's saying. His name is in the middle. And now it gets fancy. Are you ready? It's a shame that Pinchas is not here. Umikan Tavin Lama Kimtsuhu. I have never seen this before. What does that mean? Lama Kimtsuhu. I don't think you'll ever see this.
Like to squeeze together.
No, close. No. Well, maybe, but that's not what he means by kimtsuhu.
It sounds like kimitsa, like the Kohen does.
It does sound like that, but what does he actually mean? What's under the nun? In Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud. What's under the nun?
Kamatz.
That's right.
A kamatz.
And why is that important? What happens if it's not a kamatz?
It's Adoni.
Or it could be Adoni, or it could be, and it is occasionally, Adonai. With a?
Patach.
Umikan tavin lama kimtsuhu. Isn't that amazing? Why did we put a kamatz? Why did we kamatz it? Kimtsuhu. V'nishtamesh lashon hakodesh v'shem ahu b'kol shem adonut ki v'menu kol ha'memshalah v'shelton. Now, what does he mean by that? So the Levush, in his explanation of the Ramban, Dr. Shvel writes this, he explains... This is amazing. He explains that under the nun is a kamatz. Sometimes under the nun is a patach when it's used to refer to somebody who's just a lord, but not a lord with an, you know, capital L. Lot uses that term when he talks to the malachim that he meets. He calls them Adonai. He doesn't know that they're angels even. I don't think. So what are we supposed to make of this though? Why is that? Why is it important that when we say Hashem's name, we say Noi? Now, I notice it's true, only Ashkenazim are makbid about this. The Sfaradim, not so much. But we say noi, not nai. Why is it important? So the Levush explains that a kamatz has a patach and a chirik, both. A kamatz is like a straight line with a dot under it that's connected. And he says the patach is actually midat harachamim, and the chirik is midat hadin. This, I don't know. I've never heard this before, but that's what he says. And the idea over there is that Hashem is both Midat Hadin and Midat HaRachamim. We combine the both. He is the Lord in both ways. He's a merciful Lord, and he's a just a Lord of justice, and he's able to do both at the same time. According to the Ramban, Moshe was meant to pack all of that into his speech to Bnei Israel. And according to the Ramban, it wasn't just a question, you know, believe in God or don't believe in God. No, Moshe was supposed to give them a shiur, not even a symposium, not a philosophy of religion. He was supposed to give them a whole shiur filled with Kabbalah and philosophy and Torah and a little bit of grammar, maybe.
One second. He's supposed to give it to all of Bnei Israel or the Zakenim?
At least to the Zakenim, but why not all of Bnei Israel? Whoever will listen. And it's also for Moshe's
edification. He was supposed to turn him into Abraham.
You're supposed to teach them, you know, what God is and how he is going to be. And what's critical over here is that the Ramban, first of all, doesn't think that Moshe would or should give them a philosophy of religion course about the existence of God and whether he does or doesn't exist. That's not an issue. He wants to tell them about him. He wants to give them information. He wants to give them a relationship with God to understand how he's going to act. I always say that one of the differences of the way that I think about the Ramban and the Rambam actually is in the Pasuk, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Does anybody know how what's special about the way that that Pasuk is written in the Torah?
Yes, the one of them is, one of them is big.
Two of them are big. Two letters are big.
The Ayin and the Dalet.
Ayin and the Dalet. Shema, the Ayin of Shema and the Dalet of Echad are both big.
Oh, not for Ed. That's meant to represent.
So it depends. Yes. So it depends, right? It depends. It can spell two words. With two letters,
da.
It can spell two letters.
It could be Da.
Da.
It could be Da or it could be Ed. Mm-hmm. The Rambam was focused on the factual belief in God. Right? And the unshakable proof of God. That's what he was focused on. That's what he set his mind to. And he was convinced that this is the most essential thing that a person could do, is concentrating on the belief of and the existence of God. He was about Da. The Ramban wasn't so much like that. The Ramban was about the experience. He was about witnessing God, about feeling his presence, and about seeing him in the world. He was about aid. He was convinced that, you know what? Frankly, God is not interested in philosophy. He's not interested in whether you believe him or you don't believe in him. That's not, for Hashem, it's almost a silly joke. Like, it doesn't matter whether you believe in me or not. I'm going to exist either way. What I'm interested in, do you understand me? Do you have a relationship with me? Do you experience me? So for the Ramban, when Moshe encounters Bnei Yisrael for the first time, he's not going to give a symposium. He's going to give a shiur. He's going to give them a way to relate to God as a personal God. And to do that, he has to teach them Midat HaRachamim, Midat HaDin, and all of this stuff. And that's the two very, very different approaches to Ekeh Asher Ekeh between Rambam and Ramban.
I'm looking at this comment at the beginning of this paragraph where it says, "Midat hadin asher b'midat harachamim," right? Which means "Eheyeh" has two meanings. It is both din and rachamim. So when Moshe says "Eheyeh sent me," how can he assume? On what basis does he assume that the Bnei Yisrael will know which midah is being represented here?
He needs to tell them. He needs to tell. He needs to explain it to them. According to Ramban, Ehekeh is pretty much identical with Yudke Vavke in all the meaningful ways. And so he's going to teach them about all this. I don't think Moshe is just going to say, "Oh, Hashem said Ehekeh." He's supposed to teach them, unpack it. That's the way I understood it. All right. Thank you, everybody, for sticking around. I know it's not an easy topic. And it's late at night. Yishar koach, everyone.